Welcome to another edition of Nucleus Investment Insights. Apologies for the problems earlier on today. The computer decided to die mid-podcast, and so here we are back, new computer completely, and trying once again. So better luck this time around. Talking war, oil, and inflation. So there's a number of... we've seen the oil price spike in recent weeks. And coming off in the last couple of days, but there's been this renewed focus and then the thoughts around what that means for inflation, what it means for war. And we thought well worth having a bit of a chat this time around and talking through what the key issues are. So once again, just a reminder, nothing you see here today is personal advice. It's all general in nature. If you want to get personal advice, reach out to a financial planner or give us a call and we can talk to you about what is appropriate for you. So the agenda today, going to talk through some of the portfolio changes we made recently, really hone in on these oil and geopolitical issues, the cost push inflation, where that's coming from, what it means for demand destruction, and what that means for bonds going forward. So we made a number of changes at the start of April. I guess concerns about the geopolitics and the market had been on a pretty decent run as well, so it's, you know, worth taking some of the profits. But the key issues actually facing we were worried about was around the Ukraine targeting of some of the Russian oil assets, and so the thoughts around that and how we can actually approach those and how we can and what the risks are in terms of the oil price going for a run. So the oil price has. You know, we'd sold some equities, sold some bonds, bought oil stocks, really about risk management rather than sort of a trading issue around longer term themes. It's more about just saying, look, we see that we're underweight oil, could see the risks in the price, and so worth sort of topping up a little bit. And then now it's a question of whether it's starting to wind back a little bit. In terms of the oil prices, in terms of the geopolitics, I'm going to start at the other end, at this slide, the Ukraine side of it. At one stage there, not that long ago, about 15% of Russian refining was offline. Now, because Ukraine had been targeting Russian refineries with their drones and some of the bombs deep into Russian territory. And I think what's changed really is the ease of access to some of these drones and what they can target. So refineries... as much as they seem like they'd be something that would explode quite easily, they do tend to be rather large. And if you're firing missiles and bombs at them from a long way away, it is often hard to hit the most important parts. And that's where drones have sort of, and some of the changes which have been made have actually increased a lot of the damage that's being done because they can hone in on the particular parts of the refinery that are going to cause the most damage. And so... you know, while a lot of that refining has come back online, there's a whole bunch of issues that sort of surrounding that and what's happening. So first, we've got the US has actually been out discouraging the Ukraine from attacking more. And what we've seen within that is that Europe at the same time has actually been adding some more planes and bombs to the Ukraine and actually taking off some of the limitations on how they can be used. And in some, you know, members of European parliaments have actually been encouraging Ukraine to attack and you know, strike targets within Russia. And so you've got this sort of push-pull here where what we've seen is, we've seen that the refining is much more a risk. We've also seen not for a couple of months, but there was some targeting earlier on with marine drones of some of the of one oil tanker in particular. But the technology advances in marine drones have meant that it's actually much harder for Russia, which has a much larger navy, to actually patrol the sea, and so that there's risks, I guess, from that the Ukraine could extend that and start targeting more. More oil vessels and use that to slow down. So you've got sort of this push-pull between those. You've got Europe back and forth. And one of the things with the marine drones is that they're actually much harder for ships to destroy than you might think. So it seems at sort of face value, you go, well, a marine drone sort of operating in two dimensions, whereas a drone in the air is operating in three dimensions. Surely the one operating in two dimensions would be easier to hit. But the issue is that the ships are much lower to the ground. You've got the ones in the air, you've got quite a clear sight. There's nothing in the way. Whereas on the ocean, you know, the waves and radars actually make it a lot harder to see some of these marine drones. And so, so technological advantages in both aerial drones to attack refining and marine drones has made a difference. The other thing, though, as well, is that the refiners were relatively unprotected in terms of the air defenses of Russia. So Russia's got a whole bunch of different air defenses, not enough to cover the entire country. It's a very large country. They were sort of focused on some of the key areas around the border and around the fighting, but then also places like Moscow and other sort of main population centers where they really wanted to focus on that. So there's been a bit of a shuffling around now of some of those assets. So they will probably try and defend the refineries a bit more. I guess my expectation is I wouldn't be surprised to see if what we see in there is that the Ukraine goes away from the refiners for a little bit and then waits for the shuffling again and then goes back to attacking them. And the pressure from the US is very much around in inflation and I guess the thoughts around the election coming up and that they would prefer not to see another burst of inflation coming out of higher oil prices. And that's certainly the big risk, and that was sort of why the oil price has been on a little bit of a run. Then you get back to the issues that's going on within Israel and Iran. Now, this is again another sort of a weird one in terms of you can see issues with the oil price where we could certainly see that if things get out of control, you've got two different leaders in the countries, but neither of that are universally popular, and both will benefit from a bit of nationalism. Both in Israel and Iran in terms of their own political popularity and holding on to power. And so there's always the risk of a miscalculation within this. But the Iranian drone strikes and missile strikes seem to be relatively well telegraphed. So they were about avenging some deaths of some generals from some time ago. And it's quite potential that this was sort of played for a domestic audience with the idea that yes, we've fired a whole bunch of bombs at that evil other country, with the view that they'd already telegraphed it, and so there wasn't going to be much damage, and their threat of a pushback was relatively low. Now that's not to say that it's zero, so there is a chance of mistakes, but it does seem at the moment that the intelligent way would be, the logical way, maybe it would be that it wouldn't escalate further. But it is always worth watching these factors because when you start playing out in real time, mistakes can be made. And then the final other factor that could come out is the US could start really trying to crack down on some of the Iranian sanctions. I guess there's a fairly limited amount of policing of some of those sanctions, but given what they're saying on in terms of inflation, it does seem surprising that it would seem surprising if the US was going to target that more. So the net effect of all that is lots of different things happening in all different directions. You would say that it would seem that things aren't going to get too much worse from where they are, but it often seems that way. And certainly there are risks, I guess, in terms of inflation and particularly within our own portfolios, which is why we sort of added that added some extra oil and gas to sort of bring that up to more of a market weight rather than underweight, is because when you're sort of playing for say a bond call or playing for inflation lightning off, then that's your real risk, and that's why we've sort of gone through and sold both bonds and equities with the view that they both had a decent run, and the risks were starting to compound. So the other thing I wanted to touch on then is getting into this idea of this cost push inflation. And so if we've already seen oil prices jump up, that's already going to be affecting things, you know, plastics, polyester, oils and input costs into anything with transport. You know, are you going to get workers demanding higher wages to compensate? And I just thought I'd really bring back that chart, which I'd shown a few times before, which is talking about where do you start to see the correlations between expected inflation and oil prices. And what we can see within this chart, so for anyone sort of listening in, it's a scatter plot of the two, of looking at inflation versus the oil price. And there's a pretty decent upward sloping line that when oil prices are low, then inflation expectations are low and vice versa. But it really tops out around about $100. And from $100, then it actually starts to look like lower inflation. And the thought process there is that, yes, at a certain point, you get demand destruction and you get the oil price acting as a tax on other countries. And so consumers have less to spend because they're spending it all on their oil, and so or all on the transport. And so that then flows on and actually, you know, causes less inflation in the longer term. So, yeah, so this is sort of a look out at inflation forecasting and how that's being priced in. And again, we think that's relatively relevant right now in terms of looking at inflation, saying, yes, we can have a number of events get in line up and cause these problems. But on the flip side, you know, the oil demand's been quite weak and there's lots of capacity out there as well. So OPEC, the cartel there is reducing the amount of oil, and they've got lots and lots of spare capacity, particularly in Saudi Arabia, that they've been holding off. And so, you know, under the right scenario, if they all decided to pump tomorrow, oil prices could fall quite significantly. And if you ran into instead of world economic problems, you could see that same sort of trend happen again. So yeah, for our part, at $100 plus, we're sort of looking at oil as being okay. That's a bit topped out and demand destruction, and it's time to be taking the other side of that. And you know, $30, $40, $50 a barrel is you're more interested in buying. And then the question really is sitting between the two is more about that risk management side. But there's certainly you know, inflation is going to be stronger over the next little while, just based on the oil price rises we've already seen. And so we're not talking about demand destruction as well. I'm talking more about in a broader sense, from economic, you know, spending money in one place and that means you don't end up spending it somewhere else, as opposed to electric vehicles taking market share. So there's two things with the electric vehicle side. One is that they're really not that big as a percentage of the entire car market. So the average life of cars is over 10 years. There's cars, you know, a lot of cars will last 20 years or longer. And so what that means is, even if electric vehicles are 10 or 15% of the new cars that are getting sold, they're still such a small proportion of the overall market. So yes, it will affect oil demand for a considerable period of time, but there's not enough change coming through. You know, even if every car sold from today onwards turned into an electric vehicle, you still have a significant demand for oil, for years yet as yet. So that's not really good. That's not really a switch in the short term. The other thing I guess we just wanted to note was I've got a bunch of charts up there just sort of showing where do we actually start to see the break evens come, because battery prices are still high. They're coming down rapidly, and a lot of that is China doing what it did, a very similar thing to what it did in the solar panels, where it's really targeting those electric vehicles, really targeting batteries and really trying to drive those costs down. So I've got a chart up just showing how it fits. What's the trade-off between a petrol car and an electric vehicle, with the idea that being that effectively the car itself is relatively similar, and what you're doing is paying, you know, you get to save yourself a motor, an engine, and you offset that with the cost of a battery. And the costs of battery have been very high, but they've been coming down quite quickly. And the whole trade-off that you really need to think about is how much range a car needs. Sorry, a person needs within that. So if you are happy to have a 300 kilometer range, then, and you're living in the US, then your payback is less than $4. Less than 4 years at $100 of oil. So at that point, I think that's worth, people will genuinely look at that sort of 3 to 4 year payoff and start to make it a switch for economic reasons. But the thing is, if you're not happy with a 300 kilometer battery, you actually need an 800 kilometer battery, then your payoff is now, even at $100, is going to be 8 or 9 years. So a lot of it is this range anxiety and what it means for people in terms of what they would be prepared to take. So if you're happy with 100 kilometer range on your car, then right now, you know, your payback is probably less than 2 years at current energy prices in the US. But it's a question about how many people are happy with such a short range. You look at, say, some commercial vehicles that are a lot more consistent in what they're doing. So, you know, things like postal vans and things like that, where they might be able to go, yes, you know, I'm traveling 150 kilometers a day and I've got two or three chances to charge because of, you know, brakes and whatever it is, or just loading and unloading. And so therefore, it actually makes a lot of sense. You know, you can get a smaller battery and very economical at today's prices. But the real push seems to be for people to have much, much larger batteries. And so that's that, you know, we're really not close, I think, based on what people have been buying to date. The opposite argument to that is if driverless cars sort of pick up earlier than what people are expecting, then that would change that, because, you know, who cares how much charge a driverless car has, or if it has to, you know, after it drops me off, whether it needs to go and charge itself afterwards, as long as it gets me to my destination. You know, I don't really care if it's got a small battery or a big battery. And so, yeah, that's one potential wildcard. But again, you know, that's a, you know, even if they got everything right today, you've got 5, 10, 15 year rollouts before you're really making, you know, big inroads into oil demand there. If you move that same chart and you look at Europe, looks way worse. So, in Europe, you've got the, you do have more expensive electricity, and you've got higher taxes on oil, but so both of them expensive, but when you sort of add it out, it's all those curves are way further up than what you're seeing in the US. So yeah, so much harder in Europe to make an argument for economics. If you look within Australia, sits somewhere between the two, probably closer to Europe than what it is the US, insofar as, you know, we still do have much higher taxes than what you see in the US on the fuel. But the flip side is we're also seeing higher energy costs within Australia. So yes, at current oil prices, you know, even if you had a 100 kilometer battery in Australia, you're talking 4 or 5 years as a payoff. And for me, that's not, you know, that's not good enough for the majority of people to decide that's worth the trade off. So yeah, need battery prices to come down. They are coming down, and we've got a number of quite interesting new technologies coming out, particularly in some of the solid state and semi solid state batteries that are moving into production at the moment. And that could really, you see some speed pick up on the charging times, that would mean all of a sudden you don't need those bigger batteries anymore. So if people can charge in 5-10 minutes, or, you know, even if they can charge 50% in 5 minutes, that obviously takes away a lot of that concern about, oh, I need a battery that can take me 800 kilometers just in case I want to go for a long drive. It's like, well, you know, I'll pull over for 5 minutes and charge if that's the case. So yes. Similar in Australia, more similar to Europe than the US. And finally, I just want to slot in quickly a little bit of late breaking news in terms of there's been a number of explosions in Iran. These don't look like they're widespread at the moment, but it seems that so again, it seems more performative in terms of the attack, but not to say it's not going to get worse. But it is coming down to that same sort of thought that I was speaking about before, in terms of you've got two politicians, one in Iran, one in Israel, both with domestic audiences they need to play with. They're doing relatively performative attacks, but things can get out of control. And so now it's a question in terms of oil holdings about saying, okay, do you play this? Oil prices are high, not a lot of demand, lots of supply out there, and potentially the Ukraine going to ease up in terms of its attacks and play that as a downward pressure on the oil price. And I think there's certainly a case. I guess I'm more open to that case. But on the flip side, within a portfolio where you have other assets, other stocks, other bonds, and you are concerned about making sure that you've got a portfolio that's going to react in the right ways and you're not going to be over too much tilted towards one view or the other, then it still makes sense to have some stocks within your portfolio, or at least some exposure within your portfolio that's going to be protected if we do see further outbreaks and further escalations, whether intended or not. That's about it for this week. I'll leave it at that. And drop any questions into the comments below. Hit the like and subscribe. And hopefully we should be, computers permitting, we should be back on at our usual time, 12:30 on Thursdays in Sydney/Melbourne time.